Podfic of Navigator by Dilapidated Corvid. A locked tomb fic read by Caecilius in Horto. Concrete scrapes against your palms. Cold, rough. Smells like refuse, like decay. Like the smoky incense of perpetual burning in the landfills on the outskirts of town. The ground here looks like someone hocked and spat a mouthful of acid and left it to eat away at the asphalt. Worn and eroded, unevenly pockmarked like bullet craters, the cool slick of rain gathering on its surface wets your palms. The rest of the city is smooth pavement, parallel seams of glowing lights flashing ads for discrete, next-generation vertebral neural implant cooling systems, and throngs of moving people, all so different, none of them are special anymore. Mere mindless minnows. Every furtive glance is recorded. Every shoe sole striking sidewalk slabs, tracked and its wearer identified. Androids at street corners greet strangers by name. A million lights, smells and sounds compete for attention at the peripherals of their senses. There are few places like this. Alone places. Left in the city. Disconnected places. Quiet places. Overhead. Cars, freeways, neon and gasoline. Hovering vehicles spewing exhaust like a pack-a-day smoker into skies thick with fumes and moisture. Deafening heliblades. The sounds of life from the steel behemoth beast of a city. Screaming pipes. The gurgling rush of storm drains. Shouting in the distance. Gunfire like a drum roll or a snare. The wail of sirens. Noise like whitewater rapids surges past your hiding. You haven't seen the blue of the sky since you arrived. The buildings tower, cohorts of terracotta colossi, long shadows cast dark over the neon-lit city. The tallest of them a looming monolith of a spire, even among the columns of callously cast chrome caltrops. Above, 100,000 hovering drones keep the swirling storm of smog from clouding the pristine views of top-floor, mercury-gilded luxury suites. Here, in the darkness of the old city ruins, collapsed and half-buried underground, there is safety from prying eyes, and shelter from torrential rain, and patrolling drones. You take your first breath. In the corner, a real rat carcass, half gnawed and festering, rots. There is no better place for this. Your feet find purchase on the ledge you hoist yourself onto, and you step into the darkness beyond it. The punctured roof above what was once a room collapsed from neglect and rot-worn supports, lets a spot of hazy, flickering street lamp light into the centre of the dilapidated space. Illuminated, the puddle of trickling rainwater echoes off the strange geometry of the crumbling walls. Strands of plants, vines and moss dangle down, green tassels swaying gently in this private sanctum. Your boots leave wet prints on the ground, a perfect crime scene beside the blood spatter fingerprints of water droplets when you wring your cap dry. Ripping open the Velcro collar around your throat, you thumb upon the plastic buckle that holds the front of your jacket. The shell around your shoulders and sleeves, slick from the torrential deluge of rain. Closed, and fold it neatly onto the ground beside your feet. You shiver, despite the humidity. A synth fibre messenger bag slides down from your shoulder, straps cinched tight to hang close to the chest. Electrical tape holds the seams worn thin by the oils of your fingertips. From within you produce a box the length of your palm. Crouching, you set the device down, rubbing at the top left corner. The chip in the cheap, grey plastic casing of the tape player catches your nail, a scar from your last trip out. Ch! Clumsy. Getting your hands on this was like trying to find a body in the city without chrome. The man behind the counter at the antique store had one hand on the butt of a scatter rifle the whole time you were in the shop. No doubt tipped off by his pawn shop friends about an unidentifiable stranger, a void in the system records, scouring the shelves, and had squinted at you with barely veiled suspicion when you went up to pay. It had cost you more than you cared to admit, but it was worth every penny. It was always going to be worth it. From another pocket of the satchel, cased in insulation foam against impact, you take out your precious cargo. The paper sticker, marked with his slanted, narrow penmanship, now blurred and rain-smudged, softens under the warmth of your thumb. Number 74. Morgue. He had always insisted on analogue when conducting field work. There was something missing, he said, in the digital recordings of voices. Something the magnetic polyester film of a tape cassette was better suited for. You cannot hope to recreate the original with a recording, so make no compromise on your second best option. You cannot trust your fallible memory, so record as close to truth as possible. His little soapbox spiel. Every scholar heard it after their third circle exams when he became the Master Warden. Their reactions ranged from sage nodding to gawking disbelief and barely suppressed ridicule. Most too eager to share the news of their success to stay and linger on the thought. But he gave it anyway, and you were always there, half a step behind him. You understood. Of course, even in the technological backwater that was Dominicus, worlds away from this place, there are implants, more durable tech, pieces so small you'd forget you had them, high-fidelity digital capture equipment with higher temporal resolution, and noise filters that could go on long after the tape ran out. But truth never did exist in a vacuum, and neither would his recorded data. This was the first of two principles by which he understood the world. First, knowledge, the intersection between truth and belief, is nothing without the sensory faculties by which it is perceived. There was value in the human experience, in mortal sight and proprioception, that couldn't be quantified into zeros and ones. Something intangible, something irreplaceable. Truth, universal and unchanging, could only be experienced through entropic, subjective sensory experiences, after all. It was about what felt right, what felt intuitive. It was about what felt organic. Tools, he would say, is all that they are. What good is a Dremel in the clumsy fist of a child who has not mastered the principles of the chisel, who does not understand the role he plays as the artist, by his hand and mind? You had held back a retort, then, that he was remarkably steady of hand even in his youth, his scalpel work neat and well controlled, his stitchwork twice so. But he was far from wrong, and you preferred your game of increasingly unconventional expressions of negation to meaningless banter regarding that which you both knew you had consensus on already. So you had nodded, and handed him another cassette as the last one ran out. There hadn't been time to go through your belongings when you returned to your room alone after the ascension of the eighth lictor to serve the King Undying. After the grisly deaths of Silas Octocyceron and his nephew Colum Asht. After it all went to shit. There were more important things to find, to prepare, to gather. 142 tapes arrived at Canaan in an unremarkable crate of slate grey brought by the sixth. Each carefully, individually packaged in black polyethylene and vacuum-sealed chut. to prevent degradation. Only one left Canaan. Stuffed hastily into a shirt breast pocket, with an uncharacteristically ungloved hand, one he left on the table just before the third and eighth, before Kithariah. You sit with your back against the cold wall and depress the button to open the device with a satisfying, solid click. Like the low sigh of a pneumatic piston, equalising in hissing relief, it opens, a creak at the hinge at its final degrees, protesting. I'll have to oil it, you think. Oil that you do not have. Oil that you will have to buy, likely from Mechanics Row among shops with floors covered in slick iridescent oil and half-empty tins of cat from a greasy man with half a face and a pneumatic wrench for a hand, who charges you twice as much as he got it for. Worth it. You slip the tape into the deck and let it slide shut, the machine eating the closest thing you have to an heirloom. Something whirs, like old cybernetic joints choked with rust, in desperate need of repair, creaking and groaning to the tune of time and tear, and then stops. Quiet descends once more upon your underground sanctuary. The 3.5mm jack wire you keep coiled in a tight figure eight at the bottom of your pack fits neatly into the port converter you bought at the roadside shack 4 hours south of here, a relic from the transition during the cybernetic revolution. Rare. Obsolete. Expensive. Worth it. With a smooth flick of your wrist, the port converter installed in the soft inside of your forearm slides back to reveal a plug receptor, one of two pieces of chrome you have on your body, both newly installed, both a necessity. The biomod technician had looked up at you mid-procedure. The unnerving, gaping darkness of their dilated pupil, contracting back and refocusing like a SEC unit's eye, until you came into focus. He said, "You're from off-world, aren't you?" Which you understood to be a rather polite way of asking if you wanted a nasal filter installed. This would have been a very kind thing to offer in this city, but you had no intention of staying here any longer than it would take to track down the necromancer you had heard rumours of. You had a hunger to sate, a parching to quench, 100 tasks to complete before justice could be meted. So, laying on the half-reclined chair, you refused the nasal filter, the Palmer interface implant, and any more modification he peddled than was strictly necessary. just the two. Anything more than that felt wrong, perverse. Now a crackle of static fills your ears, and then from every direction at once. Warden. You know this part by heart now, and your lips form the word in perfect synchrony with your voice, distant and genial as it always has been for him. Thank you, he says. He sounds far away, lost in thought. You do not remember any more the exact details of this moment. Your memory recalled and rewritten over too many times by your imperfect recollection. What remains real and what your mind fills in, you can no longer tell. But in the fuzzy edges of your mind, you see him with a middle-distance stare, lost in thought as he hands you the used tape. After all this time, you have still to tame your quickened heartbeat at the sounds of his voice. Footsteps on the metal-grilled floor echo through the chilly stone-arched tunnel, accompanied by a particularly loud exhale. King Undying, it's cold, someone mutters. Another voice hushes them with venom. Metal wheels squeak further away, and then under the breath, a soft sigh. Shit. This part you remember. The warden, standing by the gurney rolled out of the body cooler. His hand slid, neatly supine, angled superior proximally, into the cut in Pent's right posterior inferior latissimus dorsi. His eyes closed. He dictates, no discovery left unrecorded. The cut was made with Turn's triple knife and removed the... No, the kidney's still present. He rarely made errors. Only under pressure. Only when the world sounded like water sloshing into his ears, and he couldn't focus over the roar of blood rushing through his veins. Cam, he says, urgency seeping into his voice. There was something here. Magnifier, you ask? Because you had been caught without one when he needed it 6 years ago in the middle of an impromptu on-site field dissection of a small creature, and you were never without it anymore. No, don't need it. The only implants the warden ever got were an ocular overlay to see the output of his psychometric fingertip plate on the fourth digit of his right hand on a heads-up display. His eyes flutter and twitch behind closed eyelids, scanning the readout. It was metal. Camilla, it was here for a while. The flesh had sealed over it. It would... Fuck, my timing was wrong. Nonagesimus, my timing. Static shakes you from the memory, familiar and startling still, and then silence. Nothing left Canaan unscathed, certainly not the tape. He exists nowhere else anymore. Not in the narrow corridors of the satellite station, not tucked away in a maze of folders in a mainframe half a galaxy away. Just here, just in your memories. You run your thumb over the chip in the player, silently pleading with it. Be gentle here. It's all I have of him. For several long minutes, the only sound that accompanies you in your lonesome vigil is that of rain scattering on the concrete over your head, increasing in intensity. And then the player produces noise again. Unintelligible noise, whining that scratches at your eardrums, and then... Shit, he says, and your shoulders slacken at the sound of his voice again. Catharsis. An oversight. Absolutely catastrophic. Why didn't... Cam, why... shit? In your mind's eye, his hands slap down onto the surface of the desk. His right gripping a pen, his left fingers splayed wide over a copy of Dulcinea's medical documents strewn over the surface. There is a hum of assent. Your voice, unpleasant to your ears without the low-frequency comfort of bone conduction supplementing your senses, says, "We will have time to regret later." You broke your primary oath. Liar. Quickly, Warden, the room. A fool, he hisses. You can hear his scowl, deep-set, brow furrowed, fisted hand lifted over his lips to gnaw on the meat of his index proximal phalanx. I can't believe... The tape stutters and ends. The player's low background hum dissipating like a mouthful of cigarette smoke. Quiet, once again, settles into your quiet sanctuary. A lonely and aching tone that reverberates at the resonant pitch of your soul. Reticent, you press a button. Click. The deck yawns open and the tape slides into your hands, label stained yellow by skin oils. Organic. Your index fingers slip into the centres of the spools and you carefully rewind the tape. You feel the tug of the tape under your fingers. Roll the right spool to loosen, the left to tighten. You have done this 100 times and maybe it will survive another 100 before degrading into obsolescence. The tape worn thin to disintegration, no matter how gently you treat it. They are fickle, the ghosts that have taken up residence in the space between the tape guards and the capstan and pinch roller openings. Sirens, surrounded by stormy surf, singing sweet songs atop stony spears. They croon to you the same tale, over and over, and every time you dash yourself against the rocks and drown yourself in the fathomless depths of your desperation, expecting something new. As the prophets say, madness. This is the warden's second proof. That what is done in the past, what is true, cannot be undone. Words could be scratched from the surface and written over, but the parchment of history does not easily forget, thinned and pilled at the edges by careful scraping for the keen of eye and sharp of mind to discover. You cannot rewrite this tape, no matter how many times you play it. This is the truth you will know because it hurts. Still, you plug your nostrils with wax, close your eyes, and hurl yourself into the water towards the temptress's song, into Pisinue and Aglaope and Thalxippia's embrace. His voice is wrong on it. The tape had rolled too slow while recording. There's a flutter in the signal, a mild warble in his voice at the 12th minute. It takes effort now to remember what it was like before this, the prosody of his speech, how his words, muttered lowly by your ear, warmed the shell of it. A phantom of it passes over you, a sweeping comfort that radiates out from your temporal port, where a finger biochip is plugged in, nestled just above the curve of your ear. Your implant, its prongs pierced deep into your dermis, and running in silvery threads under your scalp, leeches life from you to nurse this insert. But it is as alive as it is real, and it is as real as the man who haunts your dreams with glasses askew and lambent eyes aglow. As real as the echo of a set of footsteps, as if on a metal-grilled floor, half a step ahead of you, when you walk these lonely, filthy streets in the hallowed dead of night, with only the fizzle of neon and hiss of gas pipes for company. You wish you could do it. You wish you could slide the fragments of his code out of the incubation dock he's so comfortably tucked into, and coax him out from the scattered collection of ones and zeros, back into reality instead of waiting. Waiting for a necromancer you aren't sure you can find. You aren't sure even exists. And even if you could, would it be mercy to him to bring him back from death, a fraction of himself? An extrapolation based on the slivers of data you painstakingly scraped from the blast-gouged walls of Canaan House. To return what was analogue made digital to analogue again, as an interpretation of incontrovertible logic and cold calculated code that could never have captured all of the warmth and nuances, all that was intangible, all that was irreplaceable, of the man for whom you had a perfect love. Would it be mercy to you, Neither alive nor dead, you have cursed him to unlife in a biochip, plugged into the lowly humming implant against the shaved side of your scalp. For now, all you have is a voice. Just a voice. Just a tape through a player, through a converter, through your implant. Just a voice without its spirit, like a body without its soul. Like a taxidermied beast, a sorry imitation of the real thing. His voice is a marionette and you are its puppet master, tugging on the strings of his voice and coaxing it to play for you. Like a necromancer and their corpse. How ironic. The spools stop moving. The full length of polyester film coiled neatly around the right axle. And you look up at the clouds through the hole above. Night and rain falls and neon glows. Sweeping headlights on a foggy morning. Against grey and foreign skies. Enduring light, ephemeral darkness. It smells like slick concrete, like stale air, like the perpetual stench of the city. Like rot in a festering wound. It's dark now as you look up through the hole in the ceiling and from the room of your lament. The kind of city dark where there is always light, and the stars shy away from the brilliance of flashing screens. The kind of dark that no longer brings the warm kind of welcome shelter it used to, like crawling into the blankets you laid under in the library with the warden in your youth, when travelling beyond the orbital station was but a dream. Once more, you think. You slide the tape into the player. The chip feels warm against your scalp. You press play. The end.